Yeah.
Oh, boy. Fun with the cough button. You've been in radio, I'm going to just say.
We used to do the cough button for like easy, like 15 minutes.
Hello. Hello.
At 4:30 a.m., Bob.
Yeah. We used to do a lot of unorthodox things with the equipment at the station. We had one called Turn Up the Effin' Bass, where we would literally turn the feed for my turntables all the way up and turn the bass all the way up, and just we'd have a completely distorted signal, and we'd go up and down, turn, and we'd scream, all of us, as loud as we could, turn up the boop bass.
Can you hit some music?
Oh, we're not plugged in.
Oh.
You're going to turn up the effin' bass?
Yeah. let's see if NPR has bass. That kind of bass.
You know, Bob, our listeners, they literally will call up and be like, turn up the bass, turn up the bass. They loved it. And it's like at 4 a.m.
There's still an appeal for turn up the effing bass.
Yes, indeed. Even on NPR, welcome to the family, Stretch and Bobbito.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wow, that's just registering. Amazing.
Right, you're a part of this wonderful family with a history of love for radio.
And who better to bring us into the fold?
This is the oldest person
on air than our man Bob, B.O.B.
Two Bobs.
I'm with my two Bobs, Stretch and Bob and Bob.
Bobbing for apples.
So one of the things that I so madly love about the show that you used to do that maybe people there know, maybe people don't know, it's the fact that there's music playing.
you never told me to cut it.
No, I know. That's fine.
I played.
That was me.
Cut, I cut.
Okay, this is good. Cut. So it is the fact that what happened on your show always seemed like magic. Like it felt like people who came to your show wanted to, because it was going to be, even though it was 3 a.m, it was just going to be something they're going to remember for the rest of their lives. And how did you do that? Was that total accident?
Well, let's lay down a little bit of foundation first. Stretch and I were on WKCR FM in New York City, Columbia University's campus.
The original FM station in the world.
That's right.
Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah. Major Armstrong, no relation to Stretch.
Yeah. What year?
invented frequency modulation.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow.
On the campus of Columbia.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Hang out with us, Bob.
Doing it.
So in any event, we started in 1990, and we did the show for 8 years there. The crazy thing is that we were friends with all these really talented people who just happened to, you know, kind of step out of the unsigned chamber of our show and wound up becoming really, really, really well-known. Beyond hip-hop, beyond rap industry, just like music business, period. Right?
That's right, yeah.
He's talking to you.
No, it's true. I mean, I think
get the voices right. This is Stretch.
Yes. Hi, everyone.
I'm Bob.
Everyone that knows the show knows, you know, who the artists were, what they became. But I think one of the beautiful things about our show is how we laid a foundation for, I wouldn't say for an industry, but almost like a subset of an industry. Like we laid down this really organic foundation for people that would become producers, graphic designers, label owners, of course, artists, store owners, website operators.
Well, also
journalists.
Distributors and booking agents as well. I mean, we did lay down the platform for an industry.
But that's what you did. But when you went and you said, we want to do a radio show, I don't think that you said, let's lay down the foundation.
No, right? No.
So that's what I'm...
No, the show was birthed out of a friendship and a shared love of music. It was very simple. I mean, and Bob and I hadn't known each other for that long when we started doing
the radio
show.
So you were discovering each other.
A lot of things happened in a very, to use your word, magical way, very quickly. It was almost dreamlike.
And I guess the question that I'm trying to get at is, like, what made it that? Like lots of people do radio shows, but there was something. There was always creation going on.
Sure.
You weren't just spinning records.
Like, one, we were in New York City, which, you know, at one point, unequivocally the epicenter for hip hop culture. So all the people that Stretch alluded to, in terms of the up and coming producer, the up and coming MC, they found a home with us, which was an open door policy for anyone who was talented and who, you know, we thought were cool to have on our show that wasn't related to, I just got signed and I'm doing my promo tour.
Right.
It was like, yo, I just wrote a verse or I just produced a beat and I want to test it out with the audience that really cares about hip hop.
Or I just love doing this. Yeah. And I want people to hear me. I mean, because speaking to New York, I mean, yeah, we had the talent, but we also had the audience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you look at 1990, that's like the end of an era in New York City hip hop radio. That was, you know, for us, that, you know, the golden age, you know, 86, 87, 88. By 90, I think those shows that we so closely affiliate with that era, talking Chuck Chillout, Marley Marr, Red Alert, Mr. Magic, by 90, everything starts off peaks and then and kind of ebbs. And I think that's what happened with those shows. That's not to take anything away from them. I think, you know.
Your show did it too.
Exactly, but in 90, when we got on the radio, we kind of scooped up all these artists that perhaps did not have that access to those shows, because those shows had sort of established their families, and they, you know, there were certain artists that would get played, and certain artists that would get invited up to those shows, and outside of that, it was really hard to get in, and the in for those artists was our show.
And we had a true meritocracy, essentially. Like, if you were the most talented person that we knew, you were invited. Didn't matter if you were a woman, didn't matter if you were a man, didn't matter if you were Boricua, if you were a white kid from Queens or Long Island, it didn't matter if you were Danish, Japanese. I mean, we had artists from the London Posse, the first appearance, the first UK appearance of a hip-hop artist in New York on radio, well, actually, the US period, was on our show. And so we were, Los Angeles, Oakland, all these breeding grounds for amazing artistry and music, production, lyrics. They knew that they can send their demo, they could send their independently released 12-inch out of the back of their trunk. And if it deserved play, it really would get played.
So let's put people in that space. Paint a picture of the room, and let's play something that happened in that room.
It wasn't as nice as this room we're in now.
It was not even close. It was kind of yellowy would be my I mean, just the feel of it.
It was dusty.
WKCR was underfunded, neglected. It was in Ferris Booth Hall, which was a hideous building that was built in the 60s.
Doesn't even exist anymore.
And the board we were using was from the 60s. It literally, I'm not exaggerating, it had dust balls that would pop out of it every once in a while. And at times, maybe the left channel or the right channel would go off, and
but if you hit it, wouldn't it?
Exactly. See, well, you saw our documentary. Oh. I mentioned that in the film.
Oh, I actually don't remember that moment, but that's the way old deal worked.
It was my standout performance. it was my one laugh.
A quick insert. The name of our documentary, for those who want to explore more of our history in radio in the 90s, is titled Stretching by Beat Doe, Radio That Changed Lives. It's available on Showtime and Netflix.
It's really cool and fun.
Thank you.
So the studio was a mess, and I think, you know, people on the outside, we've heard people say, like, oh, they envisioned this like really incredible place that we were in, something that looks like this.
Palatial.
Like palatial. And it really was like cinder block walls with really old equipment.
Well, I mean, the couches had like cushion
duct tape
popping out, just the whole place is just a mess.
Remind me to show you the video I did when I first came to NPR in 88. I did a documentary called The Chairs of NPR. Three-legged chairs with foam coming out.
So, did you do college radio yourself before?
I didn't. This is my first radio.
Really?
Can you believe that? Yeah.
I didn't do college radio either. I went to Wesleyan University and tuned in to WESU.
And when you left college, you did radio.
I graduated. And then Stretch gave me an opportunity to join him on Columbia Station.
So these people would call you. They're downstairs. They got to get let into the building, this ugly building. They all come up. It's 1 a.m. They come up and you, Stretch, are...
I'm playing records.
You're playing records.
Right.
And people are getting behind microphones and just doing verses.
Well, first they walk in and they see me and they see a white guy and they're like, huh?
Right. They didn't. A lot of people.
Obviously, because you just went to Stretch and they had no idea. And you weren't a voice really very much at the beginning.
Pretty quickly I was, but I think the power of imagination is so strong that people just assume that, you know, from the music we were playing and the banter and the camaraderie that I just was like them.
Yeah.
And people used to think that I was like really, really tall, weighed a lot. No, for real.
What?
Did you know that?
Yeah, I've heard
that. And well, back in the 90s, I worked at Def Jam And then I would go to clubs or events or parties, or I would play at a basketball game after work. And then I would go up to the station from 1 to 5. So I'd be supremely tired. And also, you know, smoking wasn't banned in clubs back then. And I've never been a smoker, but I inhaled a lot of secondhand fumes. And so my throat would be really raspy by 4 a.m. It'd be like,
I want to hear something from that, from one of those nights. Just to pick a magic moment. Let's play it.
Let's hear an excerpt of Stretch and Bobbito from the early 90s.
The beat definitely is done by the unstoppable Lord Finesse. On the mic is the one they call KRS. You know what's up, representing. Listen, you could kill a man by taking him out his land and putting him in a land he really doesn't understand. Then teach him to respect Greek mythology, like Pythagoras, Ptolemy, Socrates. These people are thieves, they stole astronomy, mathematics, all tactics of biology. Even the concept of democracy, stolen from King Akhenaten now. Logically look, put down the book, use your brain. If you don't know who you are clinically insane. The Board of Education can't see that. Then they deserve to get beaten and robbed by black. Give me my frame of mind back, give me my culture. Yeah. But if you don't understand that, cause you a sucker. Now my name is Blastmaster KRS.
What?
Chilling with my man Lord Finesse, we the best.
Yeah,
the lyrical skills, you gotta love it.
What?
Glowing, chilling with the SB 1200.
Yeah.
You can catch me the 23rd of November. Remember, KRS-One is not in September. I will be at the Palladium, kicking it like this. Yes, the name is Chris, now shall I persist to pass it like this to the Lord Finesse.
Say what?
Oh shit, now words spreads around when I get down. I rip clowns, I make niggas wanna skip town. Lord Finesse got the rough raps, fuck that. When I do my thing, I come off like a hubcap. I put shit out like a fireman. You never met a fly man that slide up in chicks like a diaphragm. Can't murder me, better recognize niggas heard of me. I say that shit that gets you open like surgery. I'm so deaf, I catch wreck with no sweat when I rock mics. Don't make sense to try to go next with the mic. I'm raw, you see, you could have a silver jacket with rhinestones that couldn't shine more than me. Don't be silly and try to kill me, sound like Milli Vanilli. I smoke your ass like a Philly, rap with force when I'm kicking my facts across. The shit I kick is hotter than Tabasco sauce. Don't try to ruin me or talk about doing me. I got shit that'll spark your whole community.
That was KRS-One of the legendary Boogie Down Productions, who went solo in the 90s, and Lord Finesse from the Digging in the Crates crew. And what's special about that performance is Lord Finesse had brought his SB 1200 sampler up. So that machine was plugged into the board. So that was a beat from one of the great hip-hop producers ever, Lord Finesse, in my estimation, that no one had ever heard before. That's obviously Marvin Gaye, but he took...
The sample is Marvin Gaye, yeah.
Yeah, and he constructed by taking really, really small pieces from throughout the vocal version and to create an instrumental loop, which didn't exist at the time. The instrumental did not exist. I think it just really encapsulates kind of the joy and the sense of fun that was happening in the room. I mean, we were just laughing listening to that. It's just fun.
Oh. Yeah, and I'm sorry, Bob.
No, go.
It's your show.
But you're my guest.
Uh-oh, how long is this going to go on for?
It doesn't last long, folks. Take it while you got it.
So the other thing that's crazy about this is that, to my knowledge, Lord Finesse had never produced a record for KRS. And that's what will constantly happen on our show, is that we would pair sort of these artists who you wouldn't expect to collaborate in production or on releases, but they were there live. And so what that was the draw of our show is that, okay, we went from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. You couldn't conceive of missing the show if you were a diehard, because it had you might miss a moment that's just etched in time that will never be replicated.
Especially if your cassette ran out and you had to flip it over, well, because people were taping your show like
exactly,
crazy.
Yes. People were bootlegging our show worldwide and sharing it. And if one person missed it, they would call up all their friends. Like, hey, did you catch it last night? Can you give me a dub? And
you're
so
holding? You holding?
Yeah.
You holding?
You holding?
And, you know, that kind of demand with limited supply really helped market our show. It raised the awareness because all eyes were focused on Thursday. It wasn't just like, oh, the show's accessible at any point at the click of a button. I have to wait all week to hear what Stretch is going to play and what artists are going to be up there. Just as this moment can't be duplicated, Stretch and I, you know, we will play songs. I will play demos. Stretch will play dub plates just once. And our listeners will be calling up for months, like, please, please, please play that record again. I'm like, nah, sorry.
You didn't like playing things twice, right?
That's right. Yeah.
But what's crazy about when you think about it now, anyone can write to you at any point in time. It spreads quickly, but in the cassette day and telephone day, pretty much pre-email, mm-hmm. and certainly pre-internet, it's so different. So I'm wondering how you knew things spread, and how would you get the vibe that your show's happening, you know, without what we think of now as that social media feedback. Like, was it just phone calls? Did you leave the phone open, so to speak, all the time?
Stretch was DJing for 4 hours. I basically grabbed all the responsibilities from opening the door to answering her phones to responding to letters, some letters we would read on air, yeah. Particularly those from the incarcerated community, which really helped. That was a promotional tool for us, which we didn't foresee, because all the inmates would write home and be like, you got to listen to these guys, Stretch and Bob. Yeah. Like, you know, they're incredible. You know, they respect us. They shout us out on the mic. There were no metrics mm-hmm. at that point. We weren't on commercial radio, so we didn't have to know how many listeners we had to solicit advertising. So we had estimates of like 150 to 250,000 listeners. We knew that the signal...
But we have no idea.
We have no
idea.
It's
a nice number.
Yeah, it's a nice number. Well, I mean, the signal...
A few million.
The signal could reach, I think we had 4 states, Delaware,
that's right.
Pennsylvania,
that's right.
Connecticut, New Jersey, 5, Connecticut and New York, that potentially could tune in on better nights.
Over the air.
With
if the weather was right, the wind was going in the right direction. Seriously.
Right. So I think that's 10 million.
You stuck your arm out the window, holding onto your radio. Yeah.
10 million potential listeners weekly with the exponential unknown of the tapes that will be distributed and bootlegged worldwide.
But we didn't know. I mean, there was a...
That's what I figured.
There was a feeling in the air. I mean, just, you know, we were in the mix. We were in clubs. We were both traveling. You know, Bob was, after he was working at labels, he's doing his own label and managing artists. So he'd be on the road. I'd be traveling overseas a lot. You know, I'm going to Scandinavia and Asia, and I mean, I'm getting recognized in Tokyo just like walking down the street, which was crazy. Like, so, right. There were no metrics, but we knew that this thing was turning into something. Mm-hmm. But it was almost irrelevant because we were just having so much fun doing it that I think we would have kept doing it even if we didn't know that people were into it. It was that much fun. And we both joke. We were like, our motivation was really to have an incredible tape every Friday.
Play me one song from the day. Maybe we'll play 2 songs because there are 2 of you. And then I want to talk about why you're here, which is like...
Sure.
Yeah, your new show. So at the top of the show... I was rude. I talked over a piece of vocals. You played a song you loved. Why don't you play that for me?
All right, this is Time's Up by OC.
The minerals and vitamins, irons in the niacin. Fuck who that I affair. Rappers sit back, I'm about to begin. Bow, foul, talking squall. Never even walked the wall. More or less destined to get tested. Never been arrested. My album will manifest many things that I saw, did, or heard about, or told firsthand. Never word of mouth. What's in the future for the fusion and the changer? Rappers are in danger. Who will use wits to be a remainder? When the missile is aimed to blow you out of the frame, some will keep their limbs in, some will be maimed. The same suckers with the gab about killer instincts return. You know when damn well they lack in this division. The connoisseur cracking your head with a 4x4. Realize, sucker, I be the coming like Noah. Always simmer you down, perpetrating facade in what you consider an image. To me, this is just a scrimmage. I feel I'm stoned, not cause of Bop, but wear my cap cock. The more emotion I put into it, the harder I rock. Those who pose lyrical but really ain't true, I feel. We'll be right back.
tongue about what you did, but you never done it. Admit it, you bit it, cause the next man came plotting behind it. I find it ironic, so I researched and analyzed. Most write about stuff they fantasize. I'm fed up with the bull on this focus of weeded clips and Glocks getting caught and wax not being flipped. It's the same old, just straining from the anal. The contact is not complex, the vex. So why you pushing it? Why you lying for? I know where you live, I know your folks.
And that was
the sound is drama.
That's OC Time's Up, produced by Buck Wild.
Your whole aura is plexiglass.
And that's the song that actually is in the opening credits for our film. Bob and I both agree that that was sort of the Stretch and Bob anthem. I
think. Why? How did it become?
It's really that song's really a call to arms. It's really he sort of states in two verses sort of the ethos behind
everything that was good about hip hop in the '90s, pretty much. I would say.
Sure. And that record came out at a time when hip hop was becoming more mainstream. So there was a tension between those that were trying to do sort of authentic and credible hip hop and those that were trying to, you know, do records for radio and make piles
money.
Of money. And when our show started in 90, you know, I think it was a simpler time. There was good hip hop and there was hip hop that just didn't really cut it. By the mid 90s, our show had sort of evolved into this counterbalance to the mainstream that was happening. You know, I don't want to overstate that because we certainly still played records by artists that had gone platinum if they were doing great stuff, but I think that song kind of encapsulates that sentiment of doing it for the right reasons.
Did you like it, Bob?
Yeah, yeah.
You did?
Yeah, I actually did.
Did you recognize a sample?
No.
That's a Les Demarais cover of A Day in the Life by the Beatles. But you wouldn't know it from listening to it.
Wait a minute. What?
Yeah, yeah.
Say that again?
Yeah. Les Demarais cover of A Day in the Life by the Beatles.
Wow. It's a great interpretation.
Okay.
When Buck Wild was a producer who sampled it
and
looked it up. Oh, was the producer when that song came out. And a lot of us were baffled. A lot of our record collector friends were like, what was that sample? We were all trying to like figure it out. Eventually the information came out. But OC, just a background on how phenomenal that record. It took him a year to write those two verses. And then the music is just so powerful. It's my favorite record of the 90s when it comes to hip hop, hands down, without even an argument or a discussion, just personally. So yeah. I'm glad that you liked it, Bob.
Yeah, yeah. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. And you're listening to All Songs Considered from NPR Music.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Bonefish Grill. Whether you're dining on peak of season wood-grilled fresh fish, the one and only Bang Bang Shrimp, or enjoying a handcrafted martini, you're sure to catch an experience unlike any other. From the moment you walk through the door to the moment you leave, every detail will be taken care of with their one-of-a-kind angler service. Come experience the difference and see what's fresh at Bonefish Grill tonight. Support for All Songs Considered and the following message also come from Southern New Hampshire University, whose mission is to make higher education accessible and affordable online for everyone. If you are considering college, whether for the first time or going back to complete your degree, you want to make financially savvy decisions and avoid financial aid mistakes. You can learn more about Southern New Hampshire University and the top 3 financial mistakes to avoid by texting SCORE to 554433. Message and data rates may apply.
So these days, you're not doing a music show. You didn't come to NPR to do a music show, though. Music is still a big
heart and soul. We came to NPR today to do this music show.
Can we do this every week?
We can talk about
the Stretch and Bob and Bob show.
Stretching Bob and Bob.
Can we find another stretch? We stretch and stretch and Bob and Bob.
So tell me, first of all, how are you billing the show? What are you calling it?
What's good with Stretch and Bobito?
And then it's everything, right?
It's everything that Stretch and I are interested in, right. which runs
it's everything that Bob's interests and my interests overlap in. But we're not going to do an episode on sneakers. I might fall asleep.
Or on tennis.
Exactly.
I see you. But I'm going to say when you're about 8 years down the road, you're each going to start doing that. And then, oh, no, that's too sad.
I know. When are we going to break up?
That's too sad. We'll talk about the breakup.
When is this show going to go down the toilet? How soon?
Well, it hasn't even aired yet.
I've predicted the future. Write it down.
Building some tension here.
No, we have a phenomenal staff. We have some amazing advocates in this building here at NPR that brought the show to the forefront, to reality. We have to thank Abby O'Neill, our executive producer.
Amen.
Who
Indeed.
Actually helped book.
Indeed.
The way this all happened, Bob, you paying attention to me?
Bob,
come on.
This new music out, I was just going to go and listen to it.
Bob, come on.
I'm with you. He's doing a look in my eyes, hypnotized.
Go.
I forgot what I was going to say.
Good.
So Abby O'Neill, she booked our film in 2015 for the DC premiere, Stretch and Bobby, the radio that changed lives, here at NPR Studio
Downstairs,
One.
Yeah.
Yes. And Stretch and I did a Q&A afterwards, and it got such great response from both staff as well as the audience. And that's where the sort of light bulb went up. And she was like, you know, the two of you should be back on air doing something here. And we were like,
yeah,
cool.
And 2 weeks later, it all happened. Just kidding. It's been a long process.
And it's been 19 years since you actually did a show together.
But it's wild. I mean, I'm speaking for myself. I'm a huge fan of NPR. You know, once I hit 40, that's pretty much all I listen to.
Ouch.
And
I'm just gonna say from NPR's perspective. Hold on. Here's
that was
ow.
That was a joke. That was a joke. I'm trying to be funny. But
one of your early guests is Stevie Wonder.
Yes.
And
can you say that again?
Did you hear about Stevie Wonder?
I thought that was a dream.
And it must have been. I mean, had you met him before?
No, I had. Bob has, because
he's the
Stevie acolyte. But Stevie Wonder's song in the Key of Life is one of my first albums I bought with my own money as a kid with my allowance.
Wow.
I mean, it's huge.
And for me, the first album I ever selected out of my father's crates was Inner Visions.
Yes.
So this is 1973.
Talking Book is
phenomenal. Talking Book actually eclipsed Inner Visions as I got as an adult and really started diving into his
I like you more.
Catalog. But I along with DJ Spinna, did a tribute party to Stevie Wonder dating back to 1999. We did it for over a decade. It was
just after our divorce.
After we parted ways on a radio show. It's not the reason why I started doing a Stevie Wonder party, but you know, we both were really appreciating, Spinna and I, the depth of his catalog, because he had appeared on so many other people's records. He had written and composed, and so many jazz records had covered his music. And so we wanted to create a 6-hour homage to this, not one of the greatest, in my estimation, the greatest artist of our time. He sings in 8 octaves. If you look at the 6 albums that he released from 1970 to 1976, it's unparalleled for any other artist. There's just so many. I mean,
he's going to go on for a long time about this, which is okay.
Yeah, I'm
right?
sorry.
Right
I'm sorry.
That?
But no, but I mean, it's well, no, it's
right.
well deserved.
Yeah,
it's
is.
Well deserved.
Absolutely.
And so
and it reaches across little, big.
Yes.
Yes.
All,
universal.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Universal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
universal
in any event, so we did the party for 10 years, and then Stevie started coming to the party, and then eventually he got on the mic and started singing at the party. It was all like, just like Stretch said, it's just
dream.
Too much of a dream. And then for us to have an opportunity to speak with him for an hour and a half for our show, and this is not an established show like yours for 10 years. I mean, you know, What's Good with Stretch and Bobbito is like a debut podcast.
What's Good is a fetus. It hasn't even been born yet.
Yeah.
For me, it was, I mean, like, you could talk about the greatness of Stevie Wonder all day. That's just a given. For me, what was really special about that interview was, in addition to speaking with Stevie, was appreciating Bob's love of Stevie and watching Bob's face interacting with Stevie. It was incredible. No, really, it was.
You were in the same room then.
No, we weren't.
We weren't? we were.
Stevie
no,
was
no,
on
Stevie.
The phone.
Watching your face.
No, yeah, yeah. He's
watching your face.
Interact with Stevie, but it sounded like my face.
I don't think Stevie's face would have been like, I can't believe I'm talking to Bob.
No. My face didn't interact with Stevie.
We had three interpretations of that conversation just then.
Did I drop the grammatical ball? What I was saying was watching your face while you were interacting with Stevie was phenomenal. For me, as your friend, it just felt really good.
Nah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Jesus. And the thing that I love that all these years you make you guys laugh, you make each other laugh.
Oh,
apart.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah. You should hang out with us when we're traveling on the road doing gigs and stuff. Forget about it.
Stretching Bob and Bob on the road.
From the moment we get to the terminal gate, it's just like it's on.
Actually, we're all in the NPR family. We could do something together.
Yeah. Yep.
Hang out with us, man.
Light bulbs.
Can Stretch and I do one of your tiny desks?
Yeah.
What will we do?
I don't know.
I'll play bongos and you'll sing?
What the hell are we going to do? But you could bring in guests. Stevie's welcome.
Yeah. I'd like to collaborate with you, Tiny Desk.
We'll bring
somewhere.
In really small turntables.
We both DJ. I have done a little bit of spoken word. Stretch, you did play drums.
I play drums. I've played
You're not
bass.
Selling it, but let's
are you aware that Tiny Desk features world-class artists? Do you know that that's what that is?
No, they feature up and coming artists as well.
We do. Coming is a key.
But you did world, Anderson Paak, right? When he was like sort of up and coming.
Absolutely. Yes, but he's world class.
He wasn't world class yet.
Why? Because he hadn't sold records.
Oh.
With that attitude, no one would have been on our show.
That's right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right.
One of the things that's beautiful about your radio show that carries on to this, and even if the show is not about music and it's about politics, about whatever the new show is about, is you feel like you've known these people for a long time, and so they open up to you.
And that's our hope. That's our vision.
Yeah. And granted, Stevie and you have a history. I want to play a clip that happens to give people a sense of the show.
Please.
Maybe at some point when we get together again, I can play you some of the demos, like with Love's in Need.
Are you inviting me and Stretch and spin over to your crib to listen to demos?
Maybe, you know. Like with this song, it was originally like, oh, little lady, oh, little lady, I like to go there. Oh, little lady, oh, little lady. Oh, little lady, what the hell? What the man? That would have never made it. That would have never. Not even happening.
Oh, my God.
Of course, Stevie's referring to Golden Lady, which did make the Inner Visions album and is a gorgeous tune of all his catalog. But yeah, it was originally titled Old Little Lady. Not
not Old Little Lady.
No,
old
that's little what lady. I, that's oh. how I heard it, too. Huh? But it's Oh, Little Lady, I think is what he's saying. But I heard it first as Old Little Lady.
Yeah, yeah.
ODB's mom.
I just want to hear a second of this. And then you've got something to play for me, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, hang on. That line, that bass line. Everybody sing, oh, little lady.
Oh, little lady. I'd like to go there. I'd like for you to listen to our podcast. So, Bob, in our podcast, What's Good with Stretch and Bobbito, we have a...
Which started just 2 weeks ago, July 19th.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
A couple episodes up.
So, we have a segment called the Impression Session where we play a song for our guest and we don't tell them what it is. And so, you know, part of that, so that's the tie into me and Stretch's 90s era where we were gatekeepers and sort of tastemakers for hip hop. And in our Impression Session segment, we try to open up people's minds to artists and to songs that they may not necessarily know, both our audience as well as our guest. So today I'm going to play a song, an interpretation of Golden Lady by Stevie Wonder, but by a UK group called The Real People.
Current?
It's current, yeah. This came out last year. So let's enjoy this, Bob. I hope you like it.
All right.
Yeah.
If I don't, you know, I got the fader.
This is off of vinyl.
my eyes, waiting for a surprise. To see the heaven in your eyes is not so far, 'cause I'm not afraid to try and go in, to know the love and the beauty never known before. I'll leave it up to you to show it. And go. Of rain and the sunshine made the flower grow into a lovely smile that is blooming, and it's so clear to me now you're a dream come true. There's no way that I'll be losing, 'cause golden lady, golden lady, I'd like to go there.
Bob, we could capture that head bob of yours over the radio.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of radio is that you can't see the person, and you know, like earlier I was like, look at me, Bob. But you can't see that. But that song, wow, I feel refreshed right now. I hope that you do too. Are you going to book them on Tiny Desk?
You know, I'm going to say it needs more edge for me.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, it's like easy listening music. It's okay. Like what people, when they get into their 50s, really enjoy.
Wait, we're talking over vocal. Can we bring it down?
Yeah. All right. Yeah,
we don't like talking over vocals. I'm sorry, Bob.
But you know he's singing.
Yeah, he is. I know.
No, I like that.
Yeah.
I like the respect for not talking over vocals. I thought it was a little easy listening for me.
Yeah.
I liked his guitar, though. Is he playing the... And who is he?
It's a group called Real People.
Whoever's playing that...
Yeah.
Real Fred is his name. All their names are Real something.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. That's great.
No,
it's R-E-E-L.
No, I like that. I hope they do it.
It's great to see that Stevie Wonder's music, you know...
That blows my mind. I love
that. It's 40 years later, 45 years later, and people still covering... Yeah. His music, and it says a lot for his longevity.
Universality, which not only just place and time of age and all sorts of people, but it transcends time. Mm-hmm. And that's what great music is, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's what it's all about. Impression session, right? So you play something for someone and they give it the impression. So you played this for
Mahershala Ali,
and he is
a Oscar-winning actor of. From Moonlight and a number of other really, really fantastic films. And
and this song is?
This is Brand Nubian, Allahu Akbar.
So you play this for someone. Let's listen. And you say... What does it make you think of? What, how does it work? How does
it? It's just open ended. Whatever.
Stream of conscious.
Exactly. Whatever comes to mind. Whatever this reminds you of. However this song might inspire you. If you don't like it, you can. We haven't had any of those yet.
Yeah.
this song sucks.
So this is what he said. Right. Here we go.
There was so much influence of Islam being shared in hip hop. You know, Chuck D. Farrakhan's a prophet that I think you ought to listen to, you know, had in one
right.
Verse.
Yeah.
So what effect did it have on you?
I just think hearing just brothers in some way
Nas, just like saying certain things, you know, that mention Allah or any of the prophets in some way, you felt like it was okay. Like you just felt like, oh, not only was it okay, that it became your responsibility to be spiritually conscious in some way. And so I think it became something that hip hop is demonized so much, but people don't necessarily recognize that there's a real spiritual vein current that runs in hip hop, and how much these young men and women have contributed to people finding their path with their spirituality. So is hip hop always found a way to remind you that God was present.
Oh, right. They're talking, they're singing. I'm not going to.
You're killing me, Bob.
I know. I love it. You've been doing these impression sessions. I don't know how many shows you've put in the recorded already, but what do you see happening? Is it whatever's on their mind winds up coming out because you give them a chance?
Yeah. We've always done the impression sessions towards the end of our interview. So at that point, we've already created a nice disposition for all of us to feel vulnerable and open. And so by the time we play them the song, it's, you know, if, especially for people who love music the way we do, you included, Bob, the song can bring out a multiple amount of emotions or narratives out of our guests, and that's what's been happening. In some cases, we're using the impression session to divert the conversation prior to a new topic by virtue of the song title or the song emotion or the song. But it's just really whatever the song brings out of people.
So if I do this, time, impression session, stretch and Bobito.
That's Quincy Jones. Some in the city. I used to work with Quincy.
Which is coincidentally.
What? Oh! Yep.
I mean, that loop is in an impression session we just did.
Oh,
there you go. Did you know that, Bob?
I think Sammy might have helped.
Oh. I thought it was just one of those things.
It could have been magic. I could have pretended.
It's radio.
So, impression session, what does it make you think of?
Well, it brings me to, I worked for Quincy Jones for 10 years. I was a...
What period?
From 94 to 2004, I had a monthly column in Vibe magazine, which was his publication. It was a pop culture, and, you know, covering film, art, really at the precipice of hip-hop culture becoming extremely pervasive in urban culture, pop culture, and beyond, mainstream culture. And my column there was phenomenal because I got to interview Chaka Khan, Gil Scott-Heron, Isaac Hayes, Quincy himself got to sit in with me, and you know, it was a great time for me as a columnist, because I mean, you know, when I was 7 years old, Bob, I aspired to be a writer.
Wow.
And then, you know, however many 30 years later, I'm actually like doing it on for a publication that had 4 million readers worldwide. So yeah, I'm very fond of Quincy, his music, as well as him as an entrepreneur, and the roads that he opened up for me as a writer.
And for you?
For me, I mean that obviously, you know, if you're in hip hop, you know that was a sample for The Far Side's Passing Me By, which is if you play that now, a song could not get a bigger response.
Wow.
In a nightclub.
Did you like Passing Me By Far Side?
I don't know it.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It's okay. We'll play it for you later.
Okay. And so for me, that song takes me back to a time before the internet when DJs and producers, and you know, I considered myself at the time, I was dabbling in beat making, but I was certainly, you know, if something had sampled a record, I wanted that original record as a collector and as a DJ. So it just takes me back to that time when I was, you know, driving up and down the East Coast, going into, you know, thrift shops and Salvation Armies and record stores, and just trying to literally buy every record that I liked.
Yeah.
And then,
do you still have them all?
I got rid of a lot, but I have a lot of records. Yeah,
a lot, Bob. He's got a lot. He's underestimating. I mean, he's understating how
like
many records.
We talking like 5-10,000? We talking
how many records you have? 40,000?
More than that. Yeah.
Oh, 60, I'm underestimating.
a lot of records. So it's so hearing that just brings me back to the pain of building record shelves.
Wait
and
a minute.
Organizing
you got
records
rid
and,
of a lot.
And can we just not listen to that ever again? No. Yeah, so it just that was a beautiful time. This is before the internet, when knowledge was shared by just talking to your homeboy, and yeah. You know, everything was, there was no internet. You couldn't look a record up, you couldn't look a sample up, and a producer friend of yours might not even tell you what he sampled unless, you know, you had that kind of that sort of give and take camaraderie. It was like a secret society almost. I miss that. I miss that. It was really an incredible time when, you know, the ritual of learning about music was so meaningful, and you really had to put in time to nurture those relationships, and you know, whether it was with you and the record buyer at a store, right. Or yeah. At a record fair, there's a, you know, you get in there early by, you go to the Roosevelt Hotel record fair and you sneak into the kitchen so you can get into the room before anybody else. It's just, I miss
grab a chocolate chip cookie.
I miss that record culture, which certainly exists today, and much of it is online, but it's not the same thing.
Do you, either of you have kids?
I have a child, three and a half years old.
Oh, no, so he's not collecting yet.
He has 2 7-inches now in his collection. He didn't pick them up.
Yeah.
I was in Bulgaria for the first time just 2 weeks ago, and went to a record store, which is, you know, that's part of the ritual. You DJ out of the country.
And then the promoter takes you to the record store.
they still
And there were all these records there that were Bulgarian covers of American songs that weren't really necessarily licensed or any, you know, publishing, you know.
I'm sure there.
So you gave some stuff. Yeah. Sure. So I you mean, gave your is, child illegal contraband for his first piece.
It's not like Bulgaria is like in the middle of nowhere. It's part of Europe. Yeah, okay. I think they got the publishing down.
No, I mean, you know, these records were released when Bulgaria was under communist rule.
I guess I'm getting at, actually, besides Bulgaria and going down that road, is really, what does it mean, like now, when you can't have, you do different digging. You go through YouTube and it's not permanent, and everything feels like it could just all disappear if Spotify goes away. Mm. Or
yeah,
Apple
I mean,
goes
well,
away
the beautiful thing is that away. I mean, your ability to learn about music has just exploded exponentially, and for me, it's great because I'm, you know, every month I go through all the screenshots that I take while listening to Radio Nova or YouTube or whatever, and then I make lists of records and songs I want to get. Some of them are just files I might want to get. Some like are so good that I actually need to get the vinyl. And that would be really challenging without the internet.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have the same meaning. It doesn't.
I guess I just wonder if someone who's 12 and growing up and that's all they know, will it have the same meaning? And it's just a question. I don't know
any of us can answer.
All right. Well, you figure that out. You come back on the show.
I'll ask my son in 10 years.
Yeah, awesome. That's amazing. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you, Bob.
I look forward to listening to lots of your shows.
Likewise.
Seriously. I really hope that you
I
do.
Love you. I love your energy.
Thank you.
I hope it's contagious. I need more of it.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thank
Cheers
you.
Cheers all. Stretch and Bob Beato. Their new NPR podcast is called What's Good. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.
Love you guys.
Listeners, we just shook hands since you can't see us.
And I enjoyed the expressions on both Bob's faces.
Was my face interacting with Bob's face?
No, but my fist is about to interact with your face.
Cheers.
Later.